The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're getting into something absolutely fundamental, something that shapes, well, pretty much every interaction we have.
That's right. We're talking about persuasion. The art of it.
Exactly. And we're diving into a fantastic guide for this, Jay Heinrich's Thank You for Arguing.
Such a great book. And, you know, it's a deep dive we probably all need, because Heinrich points out something sharp right at the start.
Which is?
Most of us, well, we've kind of forgotten what real arguing is. We mix it up with just fighting.
Yeah, that rings true.
He argues that rhetoric, you know, true persuasion isn't supposed to be about winning at all costs or being hostile. It's actually meant to be a constructive life skill, something that helps us reach agreement, find solutions.
Right. Not just digging your heels in. The book really wants to show you how to take disagreement, which we often dread, right?
Yeah.
And turn it from this blame game into something productive. Dialogue aimed at making a choice, finding a solution together.
It's about being effective, not just being right, which is a huge shift for many people.
So who's our guide on this journey? Jay Heinrichs. Tell us a bit about him. He's not just an academic, is he?
No, not at all. He comes from a background in journalism, magazine editing. He spent years seeing how words actually work, you know, in the real world, how language gets things done or doesn't.
He edited some pretty big publications, Ivy League, Magazine Network, places like that. But what makes his take so, I don't know, relatable?
Well, he blends the deep knowledge. Like, he knows his Aristotle, his Cicero, the classical stuff. But he brings it right down to earth.
How so?
This is the part I love. He didn't just study these grand strategies in theory. He actually tested them at home.
Wait, really?
Yeah. On his wife, his kids. He calls his family his living laboratory for persuasion. Trying to see if these ancient techniques could, you know, settle everyday stuff. Like, whose turn it is to do the dishes.
Okay, that's brilliant. It takes the intimidation factor right out. These aren't just tools for politicians. They're for us.
Exactly. Which leads us right into the book itself, Thank You for Getting. Arguing really works like a user's manual. It makes classical rhetoric feel accessible, not scary.
So the core idea is that persuasion is everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere. And that real argument, proper argument, is about finding common ground, finding consensus, and ultimately making a choice together.
So the book walks you through this.
Step by step. It starts with figuring out your goal in an argument. Then it introduces the big three modes of persuasion. You've probably heard of them. Ethos, pathos, and logos. Character, emotion, logic.
And there's that crucial bit about time, the tense of the argument.
Oh, yeah. That's maybe the biggest game changer he offers. Forget digging into the past and who's to blame. The most productive arguments, he says, live squarely in the future.
Focusing on what should we do next, rather than whose fault was it?
Precisely.
Yes.
It's quite ambitious, really. Covers techniques for everyday disagreements, sure, but also how to handle tough crowds, how to spot when someone's using faulty logic on you.
Like a defense system.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Spotting those logical fallacies. And importantly, he stresses using these tools ethically. Persuasion, not manipulation.
Okay, let's dig into some of the mechanics. You mentioned controlling the tense. That sounds like a really powerful starting point.
It is. It's foundational. First, you have to shift your goal. Are you trying to win a fight, or are you trying to reach an agreement, a consensus? They're totally different objectives.
Right. Fighting versus arguing.
So Aristotle broke rhetoric down by time. Three tenses. First, there's the past tense. He called it forensic rhetoric.
Forensic? Like crime scenes.
Kind of. It's all about blame and justice. Think courtrooms. Who did what wrong? Who broke the contract? Or at home, you forgot our anniversary again. It's about assigning fault for past actions.
Okay. Got it. What's next?
Then you have the present tense, which is demonstrative rhetoric. This is about values, praise and blame, but in terms of like group identity.
So like speeches at rallies or sermons.
Exactly. We value freedom, or their actions are unethical. It defines who we are by celebrating shared values or condemning opponents. It cements belonging.
Makes sense. And the third one, the future.
That's deliberative rhetoric. And this is the one Heinrich says we should aim for most often in daily life. It's focused entirely on choice and action. What should we do next? How do we solve this going forward?
So deliberative is for decision making, at work, at home.
Pretty much anywhere you need to decide on a course of action together.
Hang on. If we always focus on the future, does that mean we just let things slide? Like, what about accountability for past mistakes? Doesn't blame have a place?
Ah, good question. and Heinrichs addresses that. It's not that the past is irrelevant. Blame might be necessary sometimes. But its purpose should be to inform the future decision, not to be the main event.
Okay, so use the past as data for the future plan.
Precisely. If your team missed a deadline, spending the whole meeting arguing about who dropped the ball is usually unproductive. The constructive conversation is, okay, that happened. Now, what system can we put in place next week so this doesn't happen again?
Mm.
See the shift?
Yeah, from person to process, from blame to solution, that feels immediately useful.
It really is transformative. Okay, so that's the tense. Now, let's talk about those three pillars, the modes of persuasion, starting with the big one, ethos.
Ethos. That's about character, right? Credibility.
Exactly. And Heinrichs calls it king. He insists, look, if your audience doesn't trust you, doesn't find you credible, it almost doesn't matter how logical your points are. They just won't listen.
So how do you build this ethos? He breaks it down, doesn't he?
He does. Into three essential qualities.
Mm-hmm.
First, virtue. This means you need to appear to share the audience's core values. They need to see you as being on their side, fundamentally.
So finding common ground on values. What else? Second, practical wisdom, sometimes called phronesis. Basically, you need to seem like you know what you're doing. You have common sense, you're capable, you understand the practicalities of the situation.
Right, not just abstract ideas, but know-how.
And the third one is maybe the trickiest, disinterest. This doesn't mean being uninterested. It means appearing impartial, like your main concern is the audience's well-being, not just your own selfish gain.
Ah, so they need to believe you have their best interests at heart.
Absolutely. If they sniff out that you're only in it for yourself, your ethos just tanks instantly.
Okay, ethos is huge. What's the next pillar? Pathos.
Pathos. Argument by emotion. Now, this one gets a bad rap sometimes, seen as manipulation.
Yep, pulling heartstrings, that kind of thing.
But Heinrichs positions it differently. It's not necessarily about making people weep or rage. It's more the technical skill of putting the audience in the right mood to be receptive to your argument.
So setting the emotional stage, kind of. Like, if you want people to support a bold new plan, maybe you tell a story that evokes hope or excitement. You get them feeling optimistic before you hit them with the details and the logic. It makes the logic land better.
Which smoothly leads us to the third pillar, logos, logic.
Logic. But, and this is crucial, we need to understand that rhetorical logic isn't the same as, say, scientific logic.
How so? What's the difference?
Well, scientific logic aims for objective, verifiable truth. Rhetorical logic, on the other hand, starts from what the audience already believes to be true. It works with your existing assumptions and common sense.
So you meet them where they are, logically speaking.
Exactly. You build your case using their common ground. And the key tool for this is something called the enthymeme.
Enthymeme. Sounds a bit technical.
It sounds more complex than it is. Think of it as a simplified logical argument, like a syllogism, but where one part, usually the common sense belief the audience holds, is left unstated because you assume they already accept it.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Let's say you're arguing someone should buy a really durable but maybe more expensive phone. You don't explicitly say expensive things are good. Instead, you might tap into a shared belief like, we all value things that last, things that are a good long-term investment. The unstated part is that this phone fits that description.
Ah, so you appeal to their existing value, maybe frugality or practicality, and
yeah,
let them connect the dots.
You got it. You use their belief as the starting point to guide them to your conclusion. It's really efficient.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So we have tenses, ethos, pathos, logos. What about some of the more advanced techniques Heinrichs covers more, right?
Oh, yeah. He gets into some really neat tools.
Yeah.
Like kairos.
Kairos, what's that?
Kairos is all about timing and the right medium. It's the art of seizing the opportune moment. Heinrichs points out, you can have the most brilliant argument ever, but if you try to deliver it when your partner just walked in stressed from work, it's probably going to fail.
Right place, right time, and maybe right channel, like text versus face-to-face.
Exactly. Reading the room, sensing the moment's rightness. That's kairos. And related to that is decorum.
Decorum, like politeness.
Sort of, but broader. It's the art of fitting in with your audience's expectations.
Mm.
How you dress, the language you use, your overall manner. It's about conforming enough to build that initial ethos, that sense of identification.
So they see you as one of us.
Precisely. He uses that great example from the movie 8 Mile. Eminem wins the rap battle, partly because he adopts the style, the language, the whole decorum of the crowd and his opponents. He fits in first, builds trust, then makes his winning argument.
He speaks their language literally and figuratively.
Okay.
And there's another technique that sounds almost counterintuitive, concession.
Ah, concedo, yes. This one's powerful. It's like rhetorical Aikido.
How does it work? You just agree with your opponent?
You strategically agree with a part of their argument, maybe a fact they stated or a minor point. This does a couple of things. It makes you look reasonable, lowers their defenses, and builds your ethos because you seem fair-minded.
Okay, but then what?
Then you pivot. You take that point you just conceded and skillfully turn it to support your overall argument. You yield a small point to win the larger one.
Clever. Agree to gain ground. Okay, so those are powerful tools for making your case. What about playing defense, protecting yourself from manipulation?
Absolutely crucial. And this is where understanding logical fallacies comes in. Heinrichs calls them the seven deadly sins of logic. Spotting these is key in today's world, with so much information coming at us.
Give us a couple of the big ones.
Well, one you see constantly is the straw man fallacy. This is where someone misrepresents your argument, makes it weaker or more extreme than it actually is, just so it's easier for them to attack.
So they are arguing against you. They're arguing against a distorted version of you.
Exactly. They build a man of straw and knock him down, pretending they've beaten your actual point. Another huge one is the false dilemma or false dichotomy.
Oh, yeah, you hear that all the time, especially in politics.
Right. It's when someone presents only two options, A or B, as if they're the only possibilities, when really there might be C, D, E, lots of other choices or nuances. It forces you into a simplistic, often unhelpful either-or choice.
You're either with us or against us, that kind of thing.
That's a classic example. Recognizing these fallacies helps you resist being manipulated and keeps the conversation grounded in reality.
So understanding all these tools, offense and defense, comes with a responsibility, doesn't it? Heinrichs talks about ethics.
He does. He emphasizes that true rhetoric works through choice, not coercion. It's about persuasion, not force. So if you learn these powerful techniques, you have an ethical duty to use them constructively, to guide people towards ideally mutually beneficial outcomes.
Reviving rhetoric as a noble art, not just a collection of tricks.
That's the goal, using it for connection and problem solving.
Okay, that brings us nicely to the key themes. If someone listening takes away just a few core messages from Thank You for Arguing, what should they be?
Well, number one, definitely. Argument is not fighting. Constantly check your goal. Are you trying to score points and assign blame, fighting, or are you trying to reach a shared understanding or decide on a future action, arguing? That shifting goal changes everything.
Maybe ask yourself before the next tough conversation, am I aiming to win or aiming to solve?
Exactly. Theme two. The power of the future. Seriously, this is the simplest, most transformative trick for relationships, work, anything. Stop rehashing past grievances. Pivot the conversation to, what do we do next? It breaks negative cycles.
Makes sense. Get unstuck from the past. What else?
Theme three, ethos is king. Remember those three elements: virtue, shared values, practical wisdom, know-how, and disinterest, good intentions. Your credibility is your foundation. Without it, nothing else works nearly as well.
Build that trust first. And the last big theme.
Just the sheer universality of rhetoric. This isn't just for debates or formal speeches. These principles are working or feeling in your conversations with your kids, your partner, your boss, even in how you react to advertising. It's everywhere.
It's the operating system of human interaction almost.
In a way, yeah. And the book is full of great lines that really stick with you, that capture these ideas.
Yeah, let's share a few. I think the one that really reframes the whole thing for me is, the goal of argument is not victory, but a good decision.
Mm-hmm. That just changes the whole energy, doesn't it? Takes the combativeness out.
It does. How about another?
I like this one, which can be a bit challenging. Persuasion is not about what's true. It's about what your audience believes is true.
Ooh, okay. Unpack that a little.
It means you have to start where your audience is. You have to respect their current beliefs and assumptions, even if you think they're wrong, if you want any hope of gently guiding them somewhere else. It's about connection, not just being factually correct in a vacuum.
Right. Meet them where they are, and relating back to the tenses.
There's that clear, actionable one. Arguments rule the future. The person who talks about the future wins. Stick that on your monitor.
Huh. Good advice. One more.
Maybe this one, about mastery. The most effective rhetoric disguises its art.
Meaning, if you're really good at it, it doesn't look like you're using techniques.
Exactly. It just sounds like you're being reasonable, sincere, and connecting naturally.
Mm.
The technique becomes invisible.
Okay, let's make this really practical. How could someone use these ideas in, say, a tricky situation like asking for a raise?
Okay, good one. You'd want to layer the techniques. Start with ethos and maybe concession. Show disinterest, acknowledge the company's perspective.
Like, I understand budgets are tight right now.
Exactly. I know resource allocation is complex.
Yeah.
You concede their reality first. That builds credibility. You're not just thinking about yourself.
Then what? Shift tense.
Definitely shift to the future tense.
Oh.
Don't just list your past accomplishments. I did X and Y, so I deserve more. Frame it as a future investment.
Oh.
Focus on your future value. Here's how I plan to contribute even more value in the next year, which will benefit the team company in these specific ways. You tie your raise to future growth, making it a smart business decision for them. You use logos by appealing to their assumed belief in smart investments.
So it's not reward me for the past, it's invest in our shared future.
Precisely. Much more persuasive.
What about in personal life? You mentioned parenting earlier. The classic chore wars.
Oh, the future tense is gold here.
Yeah.
Instead of, you left your clothes on the floor again,
which
is past tense blame, immediately shift.
Right.
Okay, this isn't working. How can we set up a routine starting tomorrow morning that makes it easier for the clothes to get put away so we don't have this argument next week?
Focus on the system, the future solution, not the past failure.
Right. Takes the heat out, makes it collaborative problem solving.
And just generally, being aware of things like the straw man or false dilemma must make you a savvier consumer of news and social media.
Huge difference. You start seeing these fallacies everywhere, and it helps you filter out the noise, resist being manipulated into taking sides based on faulty arguments. You become a more critical thinker.
So wrapping up, what's the biggest takeaway for you from this book?
For me, it's the simple but profound idea that good communication, effective persuasion, isn't some magical talent you're born with. It's a skill. It's learnable. And learning it can genuinely improve almost every area of your life.
Hmm.
It reframes disagreement as an opportunity, not just a conflict.
Yeah, I agree. My final thought is similar. Mastering argument, in the way Heinrichs describes it, isn't about manipulation or dominating others. It's really about connection. It's about leading effectively, solving problems together ethically. It feels like reviving a really valuable, timeless skill that makes you better, a better colleague, partner, citizen.
Well said. Becoming someone who can actually guide situations toward productive outcomes, that's real influence.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.